Welcome to another episode on the Therapy Dogs Australia podcast. Sam got a new puppy that she's raising to be a livestock guardian dog, and it's been an absolutely crazy first week. There's a lot of overlap and common considerations when raising a puppy, regardless of what future you intend for them. And we're going to dive into that today. So we hope you enjoy. Hello, everybody.
Good morning or afternoon.
Afternoon, yes. Normally we shoot them in the morning, so we're a little bit doing something a bit different today. Welcome back to the Therapy Dogs Australia podcast. We've got myself, Max, and we've got Sam, who has a brand new puppy.
Woo!
Woo! Cheers. I'm happy. Puppy called Kikimora. Which is a very cute name with a beautiful backstory behind it.
Did I talk about that on the last podcast?
Mm-mm, no, so I think that would be nice to share. Great.
Okay, yeah. I'll give everybody a bit of a rundown. I think I mentioned, I was getting a puppy? Was that?
Yeah, you mentioned it. You did.
Was that on the podcast?
Yeah.
Okay, so we have had Kiki since Tuesday last week. It's Monday today, so nearly a week. And she is a 9 week old. She was born on the 30th of January, so 10 week old Anatolian Shepherd, which is a livestock guardian dog, because I have got a dingo problem. So dingoes live in the conservation area behind our property, and they come through the property and we put fences up and stuff and blah blah blah. But anyway, I've got goats and chickens and other dogs. Got a dingo problem. Livestock guardian dogs are designed for, they're a primitive breed that have been around for a very, very long time, and their job is to guard sheep and goats against predators. So their job is to intimidate and scare predators away.
And they're very big.
They're very big, very noisy, very intimidating, very fast, very agile. So she'll probably mature at sort of 60, anywhere between 55 and 70 kilos, really. very large breed. I always said I'd never get a large breed, but that here has happened. Are. So here we are. Just because everything costs more. Like, it's ridiculous.
I love how you say that, though, because, like, for most people, Labradors – would be considered a large breed.
I know.
And that's, for you, they're little dogs.
I know. I could never understand people that had a dog over 40 kilos because everything is more expensive. Like, people that have got Great Danes and big Mastiffs, and my friend had a Cane Corso, and like, I was like, well, they eat so much. They're so expensive to feed. Everything is bigger and more expensive. But anyway, dingoes have attacked like all the dogs in our area and fatally a few of them. So you know, it is something that we need a proper livestock guardian dog for. And as I was gonna say, so their job is to live harmoniously with the predators. So their job isn't just to like go out and try and find and kill dingoes. Their job is to just say to the dingoes, hey mate, you actually can't eat these goats because I'm standing between you and them. So bark, 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 go and find something else to eat. And the dingoes are supposed to like go, oh, that's a pretty big dog. Probably won't risk my life to get that goat because I can just go and catch a rabbit. I have heaps of rabbits around here, hares. I can just go catch a hare or a wallaby or whatever. I can just go and, you know, do my actual job, which is to keep on top of the wildlife in that way. And they're part of the ecosystem. The dingo's job in the ecosystem is not to eat people's pet goats. Unfortunately,
even though they would love to,
even though that's really easy,
they want a nice hyperallergenic meal.
That's it. They're just like, I'm just gonna go single protein and it's goat. No, you're not. Okay, so move on. Go and get some flipping wallaby or rabbit or rat or whatever you're supposed to be eating. Some bandicoots. We've got bandicoots everywhere around here. So. You know, overseas, they have different predators. So they're big in the States, and they're actually a Turkish breed. So they're used to dealing with bears, mountain lions, that sort of stuff. But in packs, so you wouldn't work one livestock guardian dog.
Yeah, that would be pretty unfair to.
Yes, yeah,
Put them it's like up against a bear.
They usually work in pairs, but people have packs of, you know, 7 to 10 dogs, because their predator load is high, which is things like mountain lions or whatever, and they've got a whole heap of sheep to guard. Our predator load is quite low, but it is a pack of dingoes. But we've also got fences as well, and only a small area to guard, and it's a very easy area to guard, so it's, you know, we should be right with one dog, but time will tell.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got the dog. Now, why are we podcasting about that? Not relevant to your guys' journey of therapy dog training, apart from the fact that she is a puppy. So she is
everyone
a puppy.
Can relate to that.
You guys can relate. We've been running puppy school for, I don't know, over a year, long time now. And I find myself regularly having these conversations with puppy owners, the same kinds of concerns that pop up for puppy owners. And, you know, this isn't my first puppy. I've had quite a number of puppies. And I know these things, but it is actually really hard to have a puppy and raise a puppy. It's a lot of work and it's a lot of stress, and there's a lot of things to think about and consider. So I thought we might as well talk about it and give people some validation for one, and also, you know, some encouragement and some tips and things. I have spent a significant amount of money on getting this dog that's supposed to do a job, which is livestock guarding. And you guys have spent money getting a dog that's supposed to do a job, which is to be a therapy dog. And it's a similar sort of thing of, I really, really want this dog to be able to do this job. I really want to get this right. And I really want to, be able to experience the fruits of your labor, but it's down the track. So these dogs take 2 to 3 years to train, livestock guardian dogs. Therapy dogs are at least 12 months, but I say 2 years, but they have to be at least 12 months before they can start the job. So it's a similar kind of thing where it's just like long-term goal. Like, you've got this 8-week-old puppy or whatever, and it's just, you know, they're 2 months old, and you're aiming for a goal for them for when they're 12 months old, and you are trying to get things right along the way. And that's stressful and hard. So we're going to delve into a little bit of that.
Yeah. You got to like make sure you don't put too much pressure on yourself as well, because when you want to get from A to B, but you've got a whole long journey in between.
It's really hard not to do. So, and I tell people that all the time, like, just calm down. Like, no one calms down when I say that. So I'm just not sure.
And now you're not calm.
I'm just not sure what's wrong. Can you not hear me? I'll yell it. Calm down. So a couple of the things that I'm noticing, which, because, you know, I know better, but it's still happening. The stress of like information overload. So, which I haven't experienced that in puppy land for a while, because I'm pretty on top of the puppy thing. But livestock guardian puppy raising is totally different to what puppy raising I've done in the past. Well, let me clarify. The livestock guardian job is a totally different job to a therapy dog job. Puppy stage is actually quite similar, which is kind of mind-blowing, because they're essentially a guard dog. Like, livestock guardian dogs are basically guard dogs. So they're wary of strangers and stuff, you know, like, they're generally. And they're really, really independent thinkers. Like, it's hard to tell them what to do and stuff. Like, they just sort of do their own thing. They were designed to think for themselves, because they're supposed to be able to be left out with a flock of sheep, and guard them overnight and make decisions about how they need to do that, and patrolling and stuff like that. So they're really independent thinkers. So just like the Anatolians, just like a Maruma or a Great Pyrenees, Akbash, or, you know, any of those guardian breeds, are all really, really similar. So the information overload is affecting me, because I've been doing heaps of research, and I've joined all these livestock guardian dog Facebook groups, and it's like watching a train crash.
Oh,
like
no.
I want to be out of these groups because it's just chaos in there. And I'm in a few
Do you
different,
mean
like this.
there's like conflicting information?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's the internet, so people are mean to each other. And it's like I'd rather cut off my left leg than ask a question in
Oh,
these groups, like as if, as if. And to seeing the problems, this is what I'm trying to be like a just an observer. I'm trying to see the problems that people are posting. There's issues with that these types of dogs. Like what are they gonna what problems do people have basically with these types of dogs as they reach that adolescence? So, 8, 9 months up to like these dogs mature at like 2 or 3. So I'm trying to foresee like what do I need to sort of know about now?
That's a good approach, though.
Yeah, just to sort of figure out like, so what's the issues, guys? There's a lot of issues, but then their pet dog issues as well. So these are issues that the things that I'm seeing pop up are issues that people have with pet dogs. The different training ideologies make me want to pull my hair out. And throw my phone in the dam, but okay. But that's, I'm just trying to take in the information and hopefully find some patterns over time of like what types of things are fairly true to breed.
Have
And
you found someone that you can actually talk to?
yeah, so a couple of the breeders I've
Awesome.
been chatting with, and like I mentioned last, I've listened to like hundreds and hundreds of hours of podcasts and stuff like that. There's not, I've got one book, it's not great. The books are like, yeah, it's hard to find good stuff. There's one book that everyone recommends you can't get in Australia. Or like you have to wait a long time. Like it would by the time it arrived, be a long time. They don't do an e-version of it anymore. I don't know why, but anyway, that's annoying. Yeah. So things that I wanted to discuss for therapy dog, potential therapy dog, puppy parents, young dog parents, and things like that. Information overload and how to react to that. Exactly like Max's just suggested, talk to a person. Just if you're looking at a lot of information online and doing your research and stuff like that, that's good. And I did that too. And I think you should. But I think keeping an open mind while we're doing that is going to be really important because if I took on board every piece of information that comes across my path as I'm researching, you're going to go absolutely
You'd
insane.
lose it. Yeah.
You're going to lose the plot. Like, I feel so bad for people who are not, like, I'm already a dog expert. Like, I already know dogs, like, this isn't my first rodeo. And I was saying to my partner on the weekend, because it's crazy, man. Like, you socialize these puppies like any other puppy. And so, we've taken her out for breakfast and taken her to the pet shop and the produce and all these things. And I was saying to my partner, I was talking this over on the weekend. I'm like, man, this is like so hard. Like, but also it's like not that hard as well. So that I know how to I was saying to him like, okay, we just gotta socialize this puppy and I know how to do that. So that's okay. Just buy us some time to figure out what to do with an adolescent LGD during this time now, because I know what to do with the puppy and it's the same as other puppies. So I think we're all right. We're all right for now. Calm down. He's like, wow, okay.
Am calm.
Really glad that you've got it sorted. Oh, look, there's our breakfast. Oh, pretty funny. So yeah, I feel for people that don't have that previous experience and everything's new. Everything you're learning
Oh,
is
yeah.
new. No, thank you. Oh, and that's such a
So overwhelming.
horrible, it is so overwhelming. And it's a horrible place to be in, especially as an adult. Actually, we reflected on this last Brumby camp, which was last week, the week before last. And I was speaking to Anna about, like, these are actually adult students that we have doing the camp. So, it's really hard to be an adult learner because you are put out of your comfort zone. You don't know what you don't know. You don't know what you're doing. You get overwhelmed with information. You get it wrong. You're getting it wrong. And you've got someone telling you how to get it right, but you're an adult. So being told what to do, and especially like the Brumby thing, because these people are already horse handlers. So they know horses. They just don't know how to gentle a wild horse. And you know, all that shit you thought you knew about horses are very forgiving. So you're actually handling your rope wrong. You're actually tying your halter wrong. You're actually, you know, and these things actually matter when the horse is totally untouched and wild, because we actually need those ropes. We actually are going to need to use those ropes to save that horse's life when it gets a fright for the when it hits the end of that rope for the first time. You actually need to be able to disengage that horse's hindquarters correctly, because it will save its life and your life. So, whereas domestic horses and horses that have been handled for, you know, a long time, then it's they're so forgiving. Like they're like, oh, she probably is trying to get me to disengage my
I think I
hindquarters. I'll
know what
just,
she wants me
I think
to
she wants, and she sort of
do.
does it a bit like that. That's funny. And I just do it just to help her out. You know, I kind of like her. She brings me snacks, like, you know. But when you're teaching a wild animal, like it doesn't, you got to get it right, you know. Otherwise, the horse gets frustrated and stressed. And then that's when, like, Anna or I step in, is to teach it to the horse. Correctly, so that they are less stressed, and then you know sometimes we have to do it that way, so that and then we hand back over so that the horse is having a better experience, you know, and it's safer and whatever. But the reason I'm saying that is because it's hard when you're an adult to not know stuff and to learn things and be told stuff and to be made to feel like you're doing things wrong and yeah, to be getting things wrong and all
It's
that
not just
stuff.
that as well. It's like as a kid, when you're learning, all you need to focus on is what you're learning. Whereas when you're an adult as well, you've got so much else that's happened, so much else that's probably going on, so many other things that you're probably thinking about. So, yeah, it is more overwhelming for sure.
So that's one of the things on my list is like managing a puppy with all of your other responsibilities. Because I was saying to Amy this morning, it's just stressful, you know. She's like, oh, why? I'm like, well, because there's all these things, like, and I'm like, it's fine. Like this, because the puppy's great, right? Kiki's great. She's fabulous. I'm not out of my depth yet. When we get to adolescence, we'll have to do another podcast and I'll be like crying the entire time. That's fine. That's what we have to do. That's what we have to do. It's going really well. She's doing the things that I think she's supposed to be doing. My dogs are not super impressed, but they are being very good babysitters. They're being very helpful. I have got dogs to help me, which is great. I've got my property is set up fairly well for this kind of stuff. You know, like I'd done a lot of fencing before she arrived, extra fencing and stuff like that. I've got things ready to go. Like I was very prepared, before she arrived. So that's one thing that has definitely helped. Like if I'd impulsively bought this dog, we would have been up shit creek
Oh, yeah, no.
majorly. And just for a bit of just for a bit of context, a little bit of background for people, this dog's imported from New Zealand. This did not go well. So, and this is the exact type of thing that I normally have major mental breakdowns over is flying dogs around. Like that's the kind of thing that I'm like, no, thank you. We flew,
Yeah, if you can avoid it, you want to avoid it.
I'm
Yeah.
just not a fan. I'm not a fan. I flew Oliver to Melbourne once and I was just like beside myself the entire time. I don't think it's nice for the dogs. I don't think they like it. But that's just my per that's not my professional opinion. That's my personal opinion. I can't handle that sort of thing. So to fly this puppy over from New Zealand, I was like, I don't know about this. I don't know about this. Like, this is a rare breed. All the Australian breeds didn't have dogs, blah, blah, blah. So, and this is a, you know, a really, really excellent breeder, really, really great line of dogs, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so it's only 3 hour flight, right? Okay. I've think I can handle this. All right. Okay, let's do it. And the breeder's preparing the dog over there. We waited an extra week. If everyone remembers our puppy podcast with Tamara, she was like, oh, the puppies are like going home, like right on a fear period. Usually, like, it's just such a terrible
Doesn't make
timing.
any sense. Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense. So I got the breeder to keep the puppy an extra week to get us out of that time, fear period time, as much as you can prepare for. Like, I don't know what fear period she's in, like, you know. But anyway, we did that. Everything's all set. And so there's a lady who's buying a litter mate, another one of the dogs, who lives literally like two suburbs away from us. Crazy.
Crazy.
Like, what are the chances? So I've been chatting with her, and we actually went and met her dog. She's got another Anatolian. He's a lunatic, but he's so friendly, ridiculous. Just real bouncy and funny. Massive, massive dog. Like, me and my partner went and met him. We were like, oh my God. Like, I've already bought this puppy. Like, it's a huge dog. We're like, okay, at least we have some kind of idea now. Anyway, thank God. So they come to the airport. So we're supposed to be, so I'm like, okay, the sisters are getting flown separate crates, but together, right? So I'm like, okay, that's easier for the dog, blah, blah, blah. We arrive. They're in my name. I have to pick them up. And the like people are like, okay, so you can be the only person that picks them up, blah, blah, blah. I don't know, something with the way they booked it. We got a discount, whatever. So I've said to the other owner, like, okay, you guys just wait out here, and we're like going to go in, and like, I'm just going to pretend, obviously, they're both my dogs, and then like, off we'll go. It was important to the air freight lady, whatever. Okay, that was the plan. That plan lasted about 5 seconds because, and I was like set on it because the lady had asked us to do it. So I was like, okay, we're doing it. That's what I'm doing. So I get there like when the plane arrives, obviously, because I'm like, you know, but then it takes 90 minutes to get the dogs out. But I'm like, you know, every 5 minutes I'm walking
so
past.
What
the,
time? Let's put
this
time
is 11
to this.
11 a.m. that they've landed.
Yep.
11:07
okay.
they landed. I'm like walking past the automatic doors. I've been in and spoken to the guys a couple of times, like, the dog has landed. And they're like, it takes like 90 minutes. And I was like, or does it
you
sometimes
could go
take
and
less?
find them.
Is it sometimes less than that? And they were like, oh my goodness. So I was mucking around with them, like having a laugh and just being annoying and walking past the automatic opening doors and just like looking at them through the doors. And like, they're like waving, like, we'll come and get you. I'm like, oh, what about now? Just being a serial pest. And then some Jet Pets lady, I was talking to her, she was doing a comfort stop for some dog, and I was like helping her move this crate and just trying to busy myself, right? Because I'm bored already.
And excited.
And like, so excited. I'm so excited. The guy comes and gets me. Sam, you can come inside. They're just about ready. And I was like, I'm losing my mind. So we go in and he's like, okay, just hang on a sec, waiting for the computer update. So I go and sit down. While I'm sitting there, my phone rings. I never answer my phone, ever. But I answer the phone. And I'm like, hello. And it's like, this is such and such from Border Force. You've got two dogs arriving. And I was like, yeah. And she's like, okay, well, you don't have the correct paperwork. You don't have an import declaration. Da-da-da. These dogs are worth over $1,000. Yes. And I was like, yeah, duh. Like,
of course.
We're going to get a – can you even get a rescue dog for less than $1,000? Do you know what I mean? Like, the dogs are worth more than $1,000. Yes, lady. So she starts telling me, we can't release these dogs to you because you don't have the correct paperwork. So I walk outside and I'm like starting to panic. And she's telling me in her mean Border Force, like, she's just using her serious voice. She's telling me, you can't get these dogs, so you don't have correct paperwork. And I'm like, okay, so what do I do? Like, I'd taken my laptop. So I go out to the car, get my laptop. And I'm like, what do? I just log on? Like, what do I do? And she's like, explain something to me, but I have gone immediately into meltdown.
Panic, absolute panic.
Panic.
Yeah.
Because I'm already like, the dogs have been in the crate. So this is now 12:30 our time. The dogs have been, they started their flight at 6 a.m. our time. So they would have been in the crates before that. So I already was like, let's get these things out of the crate. Let's get them out of this traumatic experience, you know, of this flying thing, which, you know, maybe.
Yeah, it's already very long for puppies to be in a crate like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not traumatic. I don't know. That's just how I feel. So I immediately start to cry and I can't understand what she's saying. And so I'm like, I just need you to repeat this to me again. What do I do? And she's like, you need a broker. You need a broker to do all this for you. And I'm like, how do you get a broker? She's like, I'll pass you on to Jet Pets or do blah, blah, blah. Thankfully, I got her phone number before I hung up. This went on. So then it's call these people. These people are like, oh, yeah, we'll help you. Then they call back. No, we can't do it. Call this person. We're ringing around. So then by now the other owners, like I'm sitting in the back of my canopy of my car crying on my laptop, just having a meltdown. And they're like, what's going on? Because I had just said to them, okay, I'm going to get the dogs. And then I come out, I'm crying. And they're like, what the hell is happening? So then all of us are like, it's my partner's there, it's four of us. We're all trying to understand what a broker does. The Jet Pets lady's there. Like they were like, yeah, just put it on task. We'll just take care of it. Oh, no, they're not willing to do it. She's like, oh, I've already rang around these other people. They're also not willing to do it.
Did
so
you
don't
fly
ring them.
The puppies through Jet Pets?
It was through another company.
It was through a different one. I'm surprised they didn't tell you about all of this, like prepare you for this.
Long story short, it doesn't normally happen. It is the law, but it doesn't normally get enforced in Brisbane. There's two other states' airports that they have to do this all the time, but never in Brisbane. But it just happened to be the day that Border Force were
they
in
just
Brisbane.
They just wanted to crack down.
And they just had a crackdown. Yeah, they were just cracking down. That's all it is. It's just luck. Like, it was just bad luck that it was that day. So it's phone calls and brokers and this and that and rah, rah. There's another guy with a Vishla arriving on the same flight. Same thing, exactly the same thing. So he didn't have whatever. This goes on and on and on and on and on. We're at the point, it's in the afternoon, where we're like, these dogs are going to have to stay in these crates. And they wouldn't let me get the dogs out of the crates. They're like, legally, we can't open the crates. I'm like, can we get Jet Pets to a comfort stop? Like, I'm a dog trainer. Like, is there something we can do? Rah, rah, rah. Like, who do I call? Like, these dogs have been in there for like how many hours? Blah, blah, blah. Nah, can't let them out. Can't do this, can't do that. We don't know what we're going to, we've never had this. And the counter guys were so lovely to me. Like, cause I had been mucking around with them in the morning and all happy and that sort of stuff. I get one phone call and I cried all day. Like every time someone
I would have
spoke
done the
to
same
me,
thing.
I couldn't talk. Cause then what happened? I had to make it cause I didn't want to cry in front of everyone, but I couldn't talk and not cry cause I was having a breakdown. And I had to talk to try and sort the issue out. So I was like, fine, I'm just going to have to talk and cry to sort this out. Like, that's the only way that this is going to go. So I'm so, like, feel so bad for, like, all these freighting people were around. It was, like, Border Force. I've spoke to Border Force lady, like, four times. All these brokers, Jet Pets, the Qantas freight guys, the other owners. I'm just literally, they just had to get used to the fact that I was just crying the entire time that they were talking to me. And I was like, sorry, guys, like, I'm having a breakdown. Anyway, the end of the story, we finally got onto one guy who was able to just fix it. We didn't even have to do anything. He just fixed it. He just like rang someone and like fixed it. And that was like, even the Vishla guy didn't get it sorted before we left. Like, it was, he went the long way around.
Yeah.
Which is what we were doing. And then we got this other guy and blah, blah, blah. Anyway. So we get the dogs out at like 6 p.m. at night. It's ridiculous. 5:30 something. So already had this like traumatic situation happen with the dogs. So it was really unsettled to get them home that night. So we got home after dark, you know, and she'd been in a crate all day and blah, 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 blah. So it already set us back for our introductions to the other dogs and, you know, getting used to her and the house and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, sometimes these things are going to go off course and it's going to go a bit pear-shaped. I don't think we've got any major problems from that happening with the dog. I think we're okay from that experience. But it's just one of those things that, like, it set the tone. And then I had to take the whole next day to recalibrate myself, and I was exhausted.
Oh, you would have been so tired.
Exhausted, dehydrated, exhausted. So to get back on track, anyway, the stress that's involved, because I'm thinking while she's stuck in the airport, I'm thinking if she has a traumatic experience, it's going to take months and months and months of counter conditioning this dog to whatever it is that happens now. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm so worried about this early experience and this dog because I want
it can go
it
that way.
Can.
Like, it's
It
a reasonable
can.
thing to worry about. Yeah.
I said that to the guys. Like, I was like, this can cause major problems for this dog down the track. Being a guard dog, I wanted to be really, really confident because an anxious guard dog is a dangerous guard dog. A confident guard dog is one that can just bark and go away. Or a confident guard dog knows what's not a threat, basically, which is almost everything. So if I have a scared big dog, that dog thinks everything's a threat and tries to, you know, kill everything or barks all day and all night at everything because it's scared of everything because it thinks it doesn't know how to discern what is a threat and what isn't a threat. And that discernment is one of the things that is a trait for these breeds, is that you want to teach or encourage or nurture their discernment. So anyway, when these situations happen, I think it's really important that we recover for ourselves mentally, and just keep, if we hang on, like if, so for example, so she doesn't want to be by herself. So draw my head in because she howls. I made her this big puppy pen. She doesn't like it. She howls.
She's probably got quite a big voice on her too already.
She's got a huge voice on her. It's hilarious. So cute. Really, really deep bark. It's hilarious. So my plan was to put this puppy in its pen next to the goats, and she was just going to like hang out there, and I was going to put Oliver in there with her. We could not do that. Obviously, on the first night, it's ridiculous. Like, we got home. There's no way you would do that. Second night we tried it. She lasted a little while, and she was just howling the place down. So I'm like, okay. The plan was that she's obviously not ready to be out there. She was in a pen in New Zealand, so she was with other dogs, but she's used to being outside. But this is a new environment, it's a new situation, and she doesn't understand
new
it and all
country
these things. New country. But I could be telling myself, this is because she was in that crate. This is because she was in that crate at the airport all that time and they wouldn't let her out. If I did that and I used that narrative, I'm going to create a problem. So even if it was that, which it isn't, that's normal. It's normal for puppies to cry when they don't understand where they are and who you are and what the routine is. It's normal. But it is something that I've seen a lot of people do where they kind of attribute it to some bad thing that's happened or whatever. I do think you should be understanding, like, so maybe she has some fear of crates now. I don't know. I haven't put her back in a crate, so I don't know. But if we hang on to that, because that emotional state that I was in all day, that's not smart for me to hang on to that, because it was the worst day ever. Like, I shouldn't say that because people obviously have really bad days, but it was a horrible day. Like, I was thinking, so at one point they were like, you should just, one of the brokers was like, just send these dogs back to New Zealand. Honestly, just
could
send
you
them back and
imagine
re-import them again. And I was like, no, this is my worst nightmare. This is my literal worst nightmare. So, hanging on to that emotional. So I see this with dogs that develop reactivity as well. Like, you know, an incident will happen with their dog, and the owner hangs on to it. And it ends up keeping the dog there, because the owner's hanging on to that issue. That's normal. Like, we're human. Like, it's normal for you to have issues with stuff that happens and, you know, that sort of thing. Just want to encourage people to work on leaving it behind. And if that's not possible, then to maybe get some help and get some advice, talk to someone about leaving it behind, because it is the kind of thing that can cause you problems down the track. So if I developed a negative association with my dog being in the pen, then the dog's going to develop it. So I don't have that. I don't care that she's in the pen. I just don't like the howling. And I don't want her in there before she's ready to be left in there for long periods, because
you want her to like it.
I want her to like it. And I want to not create a negative. I don't want her out there getting scared. Like, if she's saying that she feels not safe out there and then something happens and she gets a fright, then I'm potentially dealing with a scared, anxious dog for the rest of this dog's life. And I'm trying to build a confident discerning dog. So I am trying to avoid that. Which leads me on to the next point. So we're leaving behind, you know, any negative associated traumas, early traumas that happen, that sort of stuff. Try and move past those, because if you get stuck on them, puppy's going to get stuck on them, most likely. If that's really hard to do, get some advice. Contact us if you want, to have someone to talk to about it, because we get it. Getting advice online can be useful if you're willing to have an open mind and use your critical thinking and look more so for patterns in advice rather than really, really specific steps of things. Well, like Max was alluding to, get a small circle of people that you like and trust and you think kind of you like their dogs or you think they've got it sorted. So, and get more specific advice from them. Rather than like forums of advice, because I can tell you now with my, you know, multiple LGD groups that I've joined, there's a complete lack of consistency, which is fine. That's dog training 101. Like there's more than one way to skin a cat, you know?
Lovely.
Is there though? I don't know if there is.
I don't want to think about it.
Anyway, more than one way to train a dog.
That's better.
Which is true, there is. So just be careful that you don't overload yourself too much with all the advice on the internet. The decisions that you make now, I know it's super stressful. Like you're questioning yourself, like double guessing yourself, things like that. I know it's really, really stressful, but I want to encourage people to just enjoy their puppies as well.
It goes so quickly. And then you go through your photos when they're puppies and the videos, and you just crave having just one more day where you're like, can go back to when they're a little baby.
They have puppy breath. They're
beautiful. Oh.
They have puppy teeth, which are really sharp, like little alligator teeth. They're really annoying. Like the puppies are really, really annoying in their hard work, but they're so cute. They're so cute. Everything they do is so funny. So funny. Like I'm just watching this dog like over the weekend, and she's just everything. She has to pick everything up. And then once she's got it in her mouth, she runs away. Like she's like, it's a prize. So it's really funny when she's hanging around. I just give her things, like random things. Like I gave her a pot, like a, you know, with potting plants. I gave her a pot.
And Dougie like, loves those pots, the plastic stoked. Ones.
Yeah. Stoked. Just runs off. Like a, she's got a little, something special that she's found. So cute. She falls over all the time. She sleeps all the time. That's another thing. Make sure the puppies are getting a lot of sleep. But the point that I was going to make about that, so I didn't really want to be like a tell people what to do with their puppies podcast, but managing my life and routine around the puppy is very annoying and it is stressful. So at the moment we're doing a dry run, a practice run, of having the puppy and Oliver locked out in the patio in the daytime together. I've put him with her because he seems to be the most appropriate babysitter. He doesn't want to bar of her, but he just tells her and then just she's respects it. So whereas these labs are a bit sort of more inconsistent in their communication. So she's out there having sleep because I've got to go to the clinic tomorrow. So it's my first day that I've got to go back to the clinic since we've got puppy because I was working from home last week.
Are you feeling
week.
A bit anxious about that?
So anxious about that. I just went and bought security cameras. I just went and bought 4 security cameras so I can set up. I had cameras and they've over time just broken down. I don't know what's wrong with them, but they don't work. So I've just gone and bought this morning. New security cameras so I can at least watch where this dog is. She's wearing a GPS tracker, obviously, at all times. So all the other dogs have given up their GPS trackers and they're just on rotational charge. But we got all this extra fencing now, so it's fine for them. They're not out there unsupervised. So, yeah, got all this stuff happening, but it's hard because I'm, like, I had stuff on for tomorrow and I actually had a client cancel. And then I blocked out another spot. And so I'm like, I'm doing like a half day tomorrow. Which is good. I feel better about that, but that was just luck that that happened. I'm trying to shorten my day on Wednesday. So tomorrow's Tuesday, and then we got Wednesday. The only days that I'm out at the clinic are Tuesday and Wednesday. The other days I work from home. So stressful, so stressful. And like, you got to practice. You got to do a practice run, which is right now. But I don't want to do a practice run because I'm like, oh, she doesn't want to be out there by herself.
It's so
Hot.
hard.
What if she gets hot out there? She's just a baby, but she's got to do it. She's got, I can't leave her in here. I thought about puppy proofing this spot in here. It's not possible. It's not possible to do. I've looked at everything and gone, I would have to like, nah,
I
it's just
also
not possible.
think putting her on the patio is probably a better step towards where she's going to end up spending more time, which is outside. So.
And she does sleep out there at night. And I've been swapping the dogs over that she's out there with. So, she's been getting used to it. I don't want her with all the dogs during the day because she's annoying them. So, she's trying to play with them and she's barking at them. And the labs are sort of, it's more so with the labs, whereas Oliver's just straight up like,
Not having it.
don't, no nonsense. Go to sleep. Go back to sleep. Or go and play by yourself. And she's like, oh, okay. Where she's like, with the lab, she's sort of a bit more like, I don't know what vibes they're giving her, but she's a bit more into it with them. And I can see she's annoying them. So I don't want them subjected to that all the time.
Yeah, you want them to all bond nicely, hopefully. Yeah.
So managing your other responsibilities, whilst you're, caring for a brand new puppy. This can take like a few weeks to get like really like I'm just want Tuesday and Wednesday to be over, even though it'll be fine. Like it'll be so fine. Like that's the reason I really wanted her in that area is because it's got the best fencing, that patio area. It's all pool fencing. It's the best fencing for her. I've started worrying about like because we've made this pen out in the yard, which would be nice, but I'm worried about her howling out there because everyone can hear it. The neighbors will be able to hear it more. And also I'm worried about her getting out of that because then we don't have like fencing. She shouldn't be able to get out
Oh,
of it, but
okay.
anyway.
Well,
Surely
it's an
she'd be.
understandable stress though, but I mean, you'll be able to see if she's got any tendencies to sort of escape. You'll probably get some indicators before that even happens.
Well, and that's what the practice run's about too, because, and I'm just like trying to sort of like validate people as well. Like if you've got these puppies and you haven't left home or you're gonna get a puppy and you're like, oh, I've got taken, because people do, they take the first week or two off work, and you should. Like even Tam says that, you should do that. And I'm so glad that my timing worked out the way that it has. But during that week, it's really hard to start putting your plan in place for when you've got to go because you don't want to. Like you just, I don't know, you sort of don't want to do it. But it does have to be done. Otherwise, it's worse on the puppy because it's not only you're not there, but it's a new routine of you leaving as well, which is a bit
And
tricky.
like you said, like it's also managing your anxiety. Like the puppy will obviously have natural puppy feelings and have their own stuff to deal with, but you've actually got to be training yourself from day one to like manage your anxiety levels as well.
Because we don't want to develop like a separation anxiety problem because we're not putting routines in place or whatever because we feel however we feel about it. So, I think it is probably just wanting to, I'm probably just wanting to acknowledge to people that, yeah, it's stressful. Yes, it is. And it's hard to make, I've been umming and ahhing about the best place to leave her, based on things like the fencing and stuff like that. That patio gets hot out there. I've got a fan out there, but I've just moved some furniture around this morning as well to make more spots that are going to be shady and stuff like that. It's undercover, but it's the afternoon sun gets it. So that's why like these dogs will be in here. But it's one of those things that like we've got to test it out. I'm looking at the weather, like I'm looking at, like if we're having a heat wave, I wouldn't be able to leave her out there.
Oh, yeah.
So then what, you know, like, so I've like been umming and ahhing between all these different spaces that we've got, and I was umming and ahhing about what dogs or dog to leave her with, so she's not completely on her own. And like I said, I've decided on Oliver, but that was something as well over the last couple of days. Like, what do I do? What do I do? So I think that's pretty normal, and I think it's good. Like, it's good to have a plan. Like, my plan was the pen. But then, you know, the puppy arrived and the plan needed to be thrown out because it's not quite the right plan. So that's okay. And to expect that there are going to be times when that happens. Like, we've got, there'll be times when you've made your plan, you've got a plan, all sort, you know, and then puppy arrives and it's like, oh, hang on a sec. Like, she's really not okay with being out here just yet. And do you know what though? She's made, because I keep putting her in the pen, feeding her in there and stuff, and she is wanting to go in there now. Like, she wants to go in there. She
That's
goes, I have to keep,
great.
it's really good, really good. When I first put her in there, she couldn't eat, she just wanted to get out, you know, like she couldn't handle it. So I've,
Progress, that's great.
so good, I've like done the, I'm in here with you and you're having your lunch, and then I'm just outside the wire, and she'd be like, I've like got videos, I'm like, I'm literally just outside the wire, and she's just looking at me howling, and then running over to her bowl, having a little bit to eat, and then running back and howling, and then running over to her bowl and having something and running back and howling. And I'm like, I don't like seeing her stressed, you know, so I'm trying to grade it. But at the same time, if I just sit in there with her the whole time because she's upset, she'll never get better with it. And now she can be in there and eat, and I can walk off and go and do something and then come back when she's finished and she's not howling, which is great. If I just chucked her in there, she would definitely, would left her in there for a longer period, she'll definitely be howling. But that's okay that she can't do that right now. But then at the same time, if that was your only option, then you gonna have to do it. If you got to go to work or go to the shops or go and do whatever you're doing, you are gonna have to just bite the bullet at some stage, and they are gonna have to just deal with it. And that's why we do things like leave them with things to chew and all that sort of stuff. I can't do that while I go away, because I'm leaving her with another dog, and the other dog, I don't want to leave them with
Yeah, you don't want bones and chews and stuff like
bones and
that. Yeah.
chews and stuff like that. I just think it's going to cause a bigger problem down the track.
I think what you're describing as well, like when people say that they've brought their puppy home and they're really overwhelmed, I think giving yourself like some grace to go, it is just problem solving. Like it won't always work out exactly the way you plan, but it doesn't mean that you're doing anything wrong. Like you're just trying to figure out like who this little tiny furball is. And yeah, like make adjustments in ways that suit you and suit them. You've got to be
Definitely.
kind to yourself.
Definitely. And like the puppy owners are always talking about this stuff in puppy school. And I think it's so important to be kind to yourself, like you say, about, yeah, it's hard. It's hard and it sucks and it's stressful. It is, yes. And you're going to be second guessing things, and things aren't going to be perfect. Like, if you asked Oliver, he would be like, no, thank you, to puppy sitting. Like, no, thank you. But it's just, he's just employed as babysitter this week, and that's just the way it is. Like, I know he can handle it. I'm not going to put him in a situation he can't handle, which is why I'm not putting my other dogs in a situation, because I don't think they're going to handle it as well. There is that burden on my other dogs, and I, you know, feel a little bit bad about that for Oliver. But at the same time, it's not forever. I think he can handle it. No, it's not perfect. Oh, wouldn't it be just perfect if this dog, puppy, 9 week, 10 week old puppy just wanted to be in a pen by herself without
Be
howling
great.
all the time? Like, you know, but that's not the way that it is. So I think, yeah, we get a lot of questions where people are feeling really uncertain and things aren't perfect and that sort of stuff. They're sort of trying to get them perfect. And like, my lifestyle is so different. Like, people have got kids that they're trying to deal with, toddlers and stuff with puppies as well. And we get a lot of questions about that. And you're you know, quote unquote, correct dog trainer answers are not going to be things that a normal family can implement, you know, like it's, and so therefore it becomes, even though it's the correct advice, it becomes useless advice because if someone can't facilitate those things with their lifestyle, then they just can't facilitate those things with their lifestyle. So I'm definitely seeing a lot of that in puppy school, where it's like people are sort of just trying to make the best that they can. And then there's, you know, a perfectionist type stuff as well that pops out, where people are really trying to get these dogs, like they just want them, you know, walking perfectly on a lead, or, you know, things like that really young. And I think just it's okay for these things to take time. Like things don't have to be perfect from day one. We definitely want to set ourselves up to avoid as many problems in the future as we can. So really simple things like, yeah, preventing separation anxiety and resource guarding and, you know, that sort of stuff. Every dog trainer is going to tell you that stuff. I think that's all good, and we can do it as much as we can. Arm yourself with plenty of information, yes, but be careful where you get it from.
Oh, yeah.
And take a break. Like if you're getting overwhelmed, or confused, take a break, because you are going to get different information. Just like the horse training world, like you're going to get different information from different trainers, and that's normal, because all the humans are different, as well as the horses being different. So I have to actually find, and you know what's funny? I've been like, because I'm trying to train this dog to do a certain job, and there's not a lot of homestead livestock guardian dogs. So people either have them as pets, or they have them on like ranches, which are like, you know, 1,000 acres, and they're part of a pack and whatever. And it's a lot easier to train them once you've got an already working livestock guardian dog, because they do a lot of the training for you, which is exactly like therapy dogs. Which I've been really lucky with, because I got Sunny and then he's trained all my other dogs. So it's more rare to have them doing sort of a both kind of thing. And there's all these like, there's all this advice over, this is how you train a ranch dog. And then there's advice of like, this is how you train a pet dog. There's less of that, like in the middle stuff. But there is some, like it can be done. There is some. And like one of the things is like, oh, you just don't have them around your house dogs at all. And I'm like, that's not going to work for us. Like, I just really don't think that's going to work for us, especially because this dog's meant to be like targeting stray dogs and dingoes. I don't think it's wise, really,
No,
for
I
it
don't think
to.
so either. And
I
also,
don't think that's wise.
Kiki to care about your dogs, because she's also going to protect your therapy dogs
That's what I
from dingoes.
wanted. Yeah, that's what
So
I
if she never
wanted.
spends any time with them, then she's not going to
Yeah.
feel connected to them.
So I'm like, that can't be real. And then, you know, there's things that are like, just put them in a bonding pen with their livestock and leave them out there 8 weeks. That's what they need. If you can't, don't have it in the house, or they'll leave the stock. And I'm like, oh my God, like she doesn't want to be left out there. She's howling. She's freaking the goats out. And also, you're not allowed to leave. You're not supposed to leave young LGDs with the livestock unsupervised, because they try and play with them, which she is definitely already doing. She barks at them and tries to chase them around. Is play bowing at them and all that, play bowing at them and all that stuff. So cute, but not allowed, because otherwise they can hurt the livestock. And the goats are like, get away from me. Like, you know, not running away from her or headbutting her, which is hilarious. So, but too much of that's bad too. Like if she gets a real
Exactly. You want them to
fright.
like her as well.
Yes. I'm trying to bond the goats to the dog as well as the dog to the goat. So then she's out there howling, carrying on like a pork chop. And the goats are like, get away from us. Can this dog go inside? So I'm like, far out, man. Whereas like in those short doses, like of interaction, like it's really cute. They're like sniffing each other and stuff. It's cute. So
What would
as
you
long as
say, Sam? Sorry. What would you say to, like, in terms of all the things that you need to be doing, but like you said, when it comes to raising a puppy, it's very similar to every other dog. What do you think the main focus is? Like, would you say it would be socialization and confidence building, the
Yeah.
main things?
Yeah. Yes. Good segue. So, because what I was saying is there's all this advice, right, online, and I noticed what I was doing is like cherry picking. Like I was like finding, like someone would say something that like suit me, and I'd be like, great, excellent, free pass. And I was questioning myself about it because I was like, I don't know if you should be cherry picking information like that. And then I was like, maybe I should be. Maybe I should be cherry picking information like that because maybe it actually does matter that that seems like a good fit to me. Because I'm part of the picture. So I was just like trying to think about it like creatively around like, how can I give myself permission to cherry pick information that suits me? I think I've got it. It's all about self-awareness.
Then doing it
Aware.
anyway.
I'm aware that I'm doing it anyway. Step one, complete. But I think there might be something to that. It's an early thought. Okay, bear with me. But I think there might be something to that. Maybe I am actually filtering out, like, because there's a lot of information I'm reading that I'm like, these people are idiots. Like, this dog's going to kill them and everyone they know. Like, people have got these dogs in their house and they're like, hey, what do I do? My 18-month-old LGD is like barking at and lunging at my teenage daughter when she comes out of her bedroom.
Oh no.
She's like trying to guard us. She doesn't see it. And like the answer is literally like so many people are answering, go, you need to go and pet your daughter and make just let the dog see you're petting her and know that she's one of us, she's okay. So and I'm like, oh my God,
That's the
can
answer.
you, I don't know if that's what you're supposed to do or not. That's what everyone was saying. And I'm like, please let me never be in this
Feel like
situation ever. Like
that's a very
ever.
complicated situation.
Well, because that's what you do with your livestock. So you when you bond them to the livestock. But then as people come onto your property or whatever, you introduce, if you're with the person who comes onto the property, the dog's like, oh, okay, mum's with them. They must be fine. But the dog's still allowed to be like wary and wily and like with its goats and being like, don't come near my goats and don't come near me. Thank you very much. Like that's fine. Like that's acceptable, LGD stuff. And it's very, very acceptable that people don't walk up to your dog and pat it. Like that's very, even people got pet ones, like you don't let people walk. If the dog wants to walk up to you and get a pat, that's okay. So there's all this like stuff, right? That's like acceptable. But then people are in these situations and I'm like, that, like, I'm like, no, these dogs are meant to be able to take down a bear. Like that
That
cat,
would
I've
be
got a cat,
terrifying. That would be
Anatolian
so.
Shepherd, controversial. Anatolian Shepherd is a tip, pretty much a Kangal. There's an argument about that, but whatever. If you want to look into it, Anatolian versus Kangal, what's the difference? Kangals are like have the like strongest jaw strength of all dogs in the world. Like people have got them in their houses, like barking at their kids. And I'm like, no, thank you. No, thank you, Siree Bob. All that stuff, I'm like, I'll just leave that at the door. Thank you very much. I'm not, this is not what we're doing. But there's things in there that people, you know, about the house dogs and like things like that that actually suit me and my situation. So I'm like, oh, maybe I can take that on as something that works in my situation and my system and blah, blah, blah. I'm, you know, being aware that other people are having these issues with these flipping dogs. But anyway, I do think that there's something to that because I'm a part of the picture here. And if people are saying things on there about how to handle certain situations like gut resource guarding and stuff like that, and I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. That's okay. And like, you know, I might see something, someone else post something another way that they handle whatever. And if I think, well, that sounds flippin' reasonable. I think that's part of the puzzle is like finding what works for you as well as what works for your dog. Wherever you can, there's probably going to be scenarios where you can't find what works for you. It just you just have to find what works for your dog, and then you just have to figure it out and become whatever that is. And then obviously there's situations where people don't figure it out at all. Well, what works for the dog, and that sucks. You know, trainers get bring a trainer in, they might be able to do it, but yeah, obviously there's situations that go pear-shaped. So I think that is really key because you're a part of the puzzle. So if you're looking at information, and I try and tell people that do our courses and stuff as well, like if anything I'm saying to you, you don't want to do it, or you think it's like sounds ridiculous or it's not for you, don't do it. Like, don't do
Yeah,
it.
there's no
And
pressure.
don't do it. Just go and ask someone else. Like, that's okay. That's totally fine. And you shouldn't do it. I've been telling people as well, if I'm telling you to do something that makes you feel uncomfortable or that you think is nonsense, you shouldn't do it, because the way you're going to do it is going to be with that kind of vibe to it. And I don't think that's fair on the dog. So I also think
intuition plays a role in that, because you'll know your puppy, but the trainer might not. So they might be giving some advice, and you know for your dog that doesn't feel right, and that's okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And if you can, the better you can describe your dog and your situation to the trainer or whoever's helping you, the better advice you're going to get, definitely. But even then, like, if it's just not a good fit, it's not a good fit. It's like if a therapist tells you to do something, you don't have to do shit. Like, if you just, you can just walk away from a therapy session and go, I'm not doing that shit. Like, you know?
Yeah.
And you might have to go and see 3 or 4 different therapists, and they all say the same shit before you're like, maybe I should do it.
Maybe there's something to this.
Maybe there is something to that. Maybe I should have a think about that. That sounds like the kind of thing I'd do. So I get it. Do your research. That's fine. Like, if you, I like it when people are using their brain, you know, like, use your brain about this, you know, and if it's not right for you, it's not right for you. So I'm going to apply that to my situation as well. And see how we go. So back to your question. We have started in this household to go, okay, best, what's the best case scenario with this dog? And what's the worst case scenario with this dog, with the outcome? Because I'm obviously aiming for this like best case scenario, which is just like ridiculous yardstick that I've set for an LGD to like do all these. I'm basically aiming for the perfect dog, because I already have 3 perfect dogs. So it just makes sense to me that I would have a 4th perfect dog. I don't know. However, probably just perfect in my eyes, but that's fine. Because they're my dog. This is the point I'm making. Like, they're my dog. They're perfect in my eyes.
They're perfect for you.
They're perfect for me. They're perfect for what I'm have aimed for. Anyway, I have this best case scenario in mind, and it's beautiful. Like, it's amazing. It's like everything I've ever hoped for. Worst case scenario that would be acceptable is that we end up with a very, very big pet dog, which would be annoying.
A ginormous pet dog.
Ginormous, very expensive pet dog, FML. So the reason that I'm like clarifying, like, the worst case acceptable scenario is that the worst case scenario is that we end up with a 65 kilo killing machine that's scared of everything and wants to kill everything and barks at your teenage daughter in your house because she comes out of her bedroom unannounced and, you know, like things like that. Like, oh my God, like kills the goats, kills my other dogs, kills the chickens, like buddies up, makes puppies with the dingoes. Like, this is, you know, the worst case scenario.
Joins the dingoes.
Joins the dingoes. Just like runs around, kills all the neighbors' dogs with the dingoes. Yeah. Like, eats the neighbors' goats, you know, like just becomes a menace of a dog, right? That's what I'm, that would be a failure in my eyes.
Understandably, I could see how you could feel that way.
So if that's, you know, that's the unacceptable worst case. Then we've got the acceptable worst case, which is what I said, which is a very, very big, expensive to feed and look after pet dog that doesn't kill our goats, doesn't kill our chickens, doesn't kill our dogs, doesn't roam. That would be, you know what? That's actually acceptable. So if, as long as this dog doesn't kill our goats and doesn't kill all our chickens, they reckon that you're going to lose a couple of chickens along the training pathway. We'll see about that. Whatever. But, you know, can it, ultimately, and we've got a problem. So I knew this before I got the dog, but I've got an entire female Labrador who's 4, and now we've got an entire female Anatolian Shepherd, and they'll both be staying entire for as long as possible. That's everyone, the breeders warned me, everyone warned me. We've chosen this dog out of the litter specifically because she's less dominant. We try and see if we can get these bitches to live together harmoniously. It might be the case that that doesn't work out that way. And I've certainly seen between Nala and Kiki, there's some boss bitch attitude from both. They're both like, what up, girl? What up? And I'm like, oh, what's going on here? At the moment, it's not an issue because she's a puppy. So, you know, it's weak, as in no one's going to get hurt. So I'm letting them sort it out. And that's what I mean. Like, I'm not leaving Nala and her unattended, unsupervised, because I don't want Nala put in a situation where she feels like she has to really put this puppy in a place. And then for this puppy to start to develop a bit of a chip on her shoulder about, why is this bitch always telling me what to do? Like, just because she's just trying to play. Puppy's just trying to play.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just wants to play. And Nala's like, ew, gross. Get away from me. So, you know, although unless I put them in the sand arena, then Nala wants to play with her. Nala just loves being in there so much. And she wants to do zoom zooms. And so.
Cute. So maybe that's the best place for them for a while.
It's so cute. Just put them in there and they play. Mm. It's cute. And yesterday Nala started to play with her. So all of my dogs, really, really young puppies and new puppies, this is very consistent with them. They're not a big fan. As the puppy gets a little bit older and as they get a little bit more settled, like they're not new, my dogs usually figure out a way to have a relationship with them. It's about, and I know that about my dogs. And so it's about giving them that time and support to find that as best we can. They don't have to have a like play friendship relationship. They just have to have a live harmoniously together relationship.
Yeah.
As much as possible. That's a really big goal, great goal, great to achieve. And anyway, the point of what I'm saying in a really long way, sorry everybody, is have your acceptable worst case scenario yardstick. Because I think I can achieve that. I think I can achieve this massive, big, useless pet dog that doesn't kill anything except for her and Nala. I'm suspicious on that, but that's okay. I'm prepared to deal with that if I need to. I'm prepared to dissex one of the dogs, blah, 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 blah. Prepared to separate the dogs if I have to. But have that in mind, because for you guys, your best case scenario is not some like pie in the sky LGD like I have done, which is like literally ridiculous. But anyway, your best case scenario is to have a therapy dog, which is hard, but it's actually not that hard. It's just like a friendly outgoing pet dog. Like it's not that hard to train a dog to be a therapy dog as long as the dog has the personality for it. They want to do it. If they don't have that, you're pushing shit uphill. Exactly the same as the LGD. So exactly the same as my situation. There's LG, there's about 30% of LGDs that just won't be LGDs, that just don't have it in them. That's just life. So you're rolling the genetic dice. But what we're doing in this puppy stage is we're trying to nurture the things that we want. And we're trying to set up management strategies for the things that we don't want. So just make the things that we don't want, just make them really hard for the puppy to do. And the things that we do want, we're going to be there, we're supervising, and we're, you know, creating opportunities for the puppy to develop into those things that we do want. Genetics is going to take its course anyway, but if we can help nurture it along the way, then we're going to set ourselves up for, you know, increased chance of success. But remember, what is your acceptable worst case scenario? You don't want to go into unacceptable worst case scenario territory, because that's where we're dealing with really problem dogs that are unhappy. The dog is unhappy. You are unhappy. Your other dogs are unhappy. Your teenage daughter who's just trying to walk through the house, getting barked at, she's not very happy. You know, someone gets injured, whatever. The dog's just an anxious mess. It's tearing apart your house, your yard. Injuring itself, like dogs that get really bad separation anxiety, they injure themselves, they destroy, you know, things like that. We want to not be in that realm of unacceptable worst case scenario. But where is your acceptable worst case scenario? And I try and explain to people, I think it is that you just have a pet dog,
because a happy, well adjusted,
confident, balanced, well-adjusted pet dog that fits into your lifestyle and makes you happy, and you love this dog and this dog loves you, and it doesn't know it's not a therapy dog. The dog doesn't know or care that it's not a therapy dog. It just knows you and loves you, and it loves its life in doing what it does as a dog. And you are going to love this dog. Like, yes, you'll be disappointed. I'm going to be pissed if I don't have an LGD at the end of this. so much work, effort, and money. I'm going to be pissed as. Probably will. You know me. I probably will.
Another one.
I'll be like, what about getting a flipping Great Pyrenees? What about that? Maybe it was a problem.
Let's try that.
So keep that in mind, that your, you know, ultimate goal, and at the end of the day, you're going to love this dog. It's going to love you. Make the most of the time that you have as puppy. Do the best you can, but beating yourself up over things or having really unrealistic expectations of yourself or your puppy, I don't think is going to be helpful, because I know better than to do that. And I'm still like, wow, I can really feel the weight of this. Like, I can really feel there's a lot of decisions that I'm having to make, and there's a lot of planning I'm having to do, and there's a lot of new routines being formed, and man, this is heavy. Like, it's a lot. And I'm like, at the moment, fine. Like, I'm fine. But at the same time, what about people that aren't fine? Like, it's a lot. And I know, because I'm talking to people in puppy school, I know that people aren't fine. And they're stressing and all that sort of stuff. So if we can sort of reframe it that way and have a think about, you know, at the end of the day, you'll be disappointed. This dog's not a therapy dog, but you're going to love this dog. You're going to love this dog, and you want this dog. You're going to love your life with this dog, and your dog to love their life with you. So it's not that hard to raise a well-adjusted pet dog. You know, if you've got reasonable genetics, it's not that hard to do. That fits into your lifestyle fairly well. It's really not that hard to do. There's like a few things we need to do along the way, but it's not that hard. So don't let the pressure of wanting this dog to be a quote unquote perfect therapy dog weigh you down. If the dog's going to be a therapy dog, it's going to be a therapy dog. If my LGD is going to be an LGD, she'll be an LGD. We can set things, opportunities up, like I said, set up opportunities to nurture them into those roles along the way. But essentially, if you overstress or get overwhelmed or you freak out or whatever, I don't actually think that's going to be helpful. I want you to have a helpful amount of stress, which is taking it seriously. But that's the amount of stress that I want you to have to raise a pet dog. I want everyone who gets a puppy who's raising a pet dog, I want them all to have a reasonable amount of stress that keeps them, you know, forward planning and thinking ahead and thinking about this from the puppy's perspective. And what are we going to be doing next week about this? And we need socialization opportunities. And like, you know, I'm trying to plan, schedule things. I'm trying to schedule outings for this puppy to socialize around her naps and things like that, because I know she needs to sleep for flipping 4 hours so that we can go out for half an hour. And then she needs to come, then she needs to eat her lunch. And then she needs to have she needs to rest so she doesn't get bloat. Then she's got to have a play. Got to do this, got to do that, got to do all these things. But that's pet dog stuff. That's a normal amount of stress to have with that.
I feel like a lot of people, when they go to puppy school, depending on the puppy school, sometimes I think they can get caught up in the tricks, like making sure the puppy sits and lies down.
Yes.
And the practicing of the healing on the walk, and like none of that really, while that can be a really good, I think, bonding activity and like building the communication that you can have with your puppy, that stuff can be dealt with like later. Like, I feel like overwhelmed
that should
can
just
sometimes
be fun.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, it shouldn't be like they haven't learned how to sit and I've failed as a puppy parent.
Yeah.
Like, that's not the stuff that really matters when you've brought your puppy home. But I think that's what can contribute to overwhelm, when you're like, oh, but we haven't been doing our 10 minutes, 3 times a day training sessions. Like, that stuff, I think, can sometimes get in the way of you just focusing on like the mental state of your dog. Like, just.
I agree. The relationship building stuff, like, people always think like it's such a big like flex that they've got that much with going with their dogs, but it's like, they're just a baby. Like, that, we can do that later.
Mm.
It's great to start now, but start as for fun. Like, don't start it now and think that you have to get a lot achieved. Do it for fun. Do it for a relationship. Do it for, you know, getting their bond with you and things like that, and enjoying them and spending, having something to do, spend time with them, and to tire them out as well, because they need to have that stimulation. And learning is a fantastic way to do that, because anyone that's got a puppy right now knows they are destructive when they're bored. So the more that you can kind of, you're kind of in this routine of like feed them, rest, and then stimulate them, and then sleep, and then feed them, quick rest, stimulate them, and then sleep. Because if you don't stimulate them, they get destructive. And if you don't let them sleep, they will destroy everything that you own. And, you know, be really, they'll be naughty to your other dogs.
They'll be little
and
T-Rexes.
Yeah. Yes, and they are. And like, and that's how you know they're tired. So you've got to balance out like stimulation and exercise, but then don't overdo it, because they need so much sleep, so much sleep. And don't overdo your socialization either, because they need so much sleep.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that's enough. Good
that
luck,
was great.
Guys. I'm here with you.
Send us a message if you've got any questions about it, you know, and like we've been saying, we've got our puppy school and we've got our adolescent school and our adult school.
Don't be afraid to bring these things up. Like, it's like, I'm there with you, you know, like with people already bringing these things up anyway, which made me realize that we probably should talk about it, but hang in there, guys. What
You're
is
doing
your
better than you think.
Acceptable worst case scenario?
Yeah.
And we're going to work up from there.
And we'll definitely keep you updated on little Kiki.
Little Kiki. Kiki.
Thanks,
Kiki.
Sam.
Okay, bye, guys.
Bye. Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you're interested in studying with Therapy Dogs Australia, or you have a few more questions before deciding, please get in touch with us by emailing courses@therapydog.com.au or visiting our website at www.therapydog.com.au for more information and FAQs.